Because I think a lot of personalization, some people use the term display conditions, are quite manual. And it means you have to go through a lot of setup and you need to have to go through a lot of thinking about what you're doing. And for smaller store owners, it actually has quite a lot of work to be thinking about all these things and trying to make sure that you're covering all bases. Obviously, for the bigger players, they've got teams of people that can do that. So anything that we can provide that gives a little bit more than just your standard, here's other things in the category, we'll obviously increase revenue because it's a little bit more focused and targeted.
Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Biz Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo Biz Chat, sponsored by Omnisend. Omnisend is a solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops and your own website. And AirWallex, their online payment plugin allows you or your clients to localize your WooCommerce store checkout experience by enabling customers to pay with preferred currencies and payment methods. I'll tell you more about our sponsors later in the show. But today we have a special Woo Biz Chat. Host Katie Keith recently co-authored the book, The Marketer's Guide to WooCommerce, with Paul Halfpenny from Filter. The treat in store for you is the two of them sharing a lot of what they wrote about and having conversations around it. Whether you are creating a Woo shop for yourself or for clients, there's a lot of great tips that you'll walk away with after listening to this episode. So let's get right into it.
Hello and welcome to Do the Woo. I'm Katie Keith, co-founder and CEO at Barn2 Plugins, and today I'm joined by guest Paul Halfpenny from Filter. So Paul, can you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do?
Hello Katie, I'm Paul. I'm the CTO and co-founder of Filter. We're a WordPress digital agency, and we've also created our own plugin. It's called Personalized WP, so I'm running that as well.
Excellent. And we've been working together a bit lately, haven't we? Because we co-authored an ebook called The Marketer's Guide to WooCommerce. So do you want to talk a bit about the ebook and why Filter came up with the idea for it?
Yeah, so we wanted to create some content for potential clients, really, just to talk about how you can deliver a stable, secure, and performant e-commerce platform on WordPress. And obviously WooCommerce is probably the best answer for that. So we created a book that helps you to understand why to choose WooCommerce as a platform and why it's the best platform on WordPress to do that, including some tips on best plugins to use, how to find the right hosting for it, and some of the customizations you might use on WooCommerce, such as things like memberships and subscriptions.
Yeah, and the book is completely free. It's genuinely just to help people build a more successful WooCommerce store, and it's available for download on the filter.agency website. And so we thought that there was a lot in the book about how to build a more successful store from a marketer's perspective, which we thought would be relevant to the Do the Woo audience. So we thought that today, let's go through some of the key areas of the book and share some of the learnings from it to help people out more. So we thought we'd kind of skip the initial parts, which is about why choose WooCommerce, because if you're listening to Do the Woo, you're probably already in the WooCommerce space in some sense. So after those bits, it starts to get into the more nuts and bolts of how to get your store right from a marketing perspective, because you can just install WooCommerce as it comes, can't you, Paul? But then how do you bring it to the next level?
Well, I think you do need to, don't you? There's loads of plugins and extensions that can make WooCommerce into a really great store. But I think it's understanding which ones are going to have the most impact for you and thinking about how you're going to reach your audience with your store. So obviously there's kind of two areas to it, really. There's optimizing your store itself. So adding in features and plugins and customizations that will make your store sell your products to people when they come and find your store. So you might be like optimizing your shop pages. You might be optimizing that checkout journey. You might be offering different pricing and things like that. You might be cross-selling or upselling. But then there's also how do you get people to come to your store and buy your products in the first place, which is actually probably the harder challenge. But I know that, Katie, what you do with Barn 2 is you have a number of plugins that help people to optimize their store. So perhaps it would be good to talk about how, from a starting point, what are the most popular ways of optimizing your store? And then perhaps we can talk about how we can then bring people to it.
Yeah, let's talk through the WooCommerce customer journey from start to finish in terms of how to make your store better marketing-wise once people are on it. And then at the end, we can go into strategies to drive traffic to your store, as you said. So typically, people find the store and they might end up on your main shop page or a category page or a page which lists lots of products. And in WooCommerce, it always kind of looks the same, doesn't it? Like it's usually got three columns of products in a grid. And there's some filters that you can add to your sidebar as well, where you can select attributes and things like that. So I'd say the first step is thinking about, is that the best way to display the types of products that you sell? Because some shops, like clothes shops, I think work really well in that layout because you want a big image for each product. You don't want much information about it and that kind of thing. But then there's other products, like let's say you're selling nails or something, like hardware type store, where people really don't care to see a big image of it. They care what the specifications are. Then there's other ways to do that. So for example, we have a plugin called WooCommerce Product Table, which has a tabular structure for your shop page with different columns of information. So if you were selling nails, then you could have the different sizes and what material it's made from and what type of wall it's designed to go into or whatever. This is not my area. And so it's a good way to sell products like that aren't designed for that sort of large image format. But then if there isn't a plugin that meets your needs, there is, of course, the opportunity to do a bespoke layout for your shop page. Can you think of any good use cases, Paul, for when you might want to code your completely bespoke shop page?
Yeah, so sometimes we've used the WooCommerce REST API to bring in products into a different layout, completely custom bespoke layout. And that's helped us when we were doing a shop called Garrard, for instance, where we did, which was all about jewelry, and they wanted certain images or certain products to be featured in different ways to other products and have the ability to showcase those products in different ways that might be different to how it was out of the box. So we've certainly used the REST API and then used JavaScript on the front end and used React or Vue.js to customize that experience, which has worked really well for us and allowed us to totally customize what we need to do for the client.
Yeah, because you don't have to just do what the theme does or what WooCommerce does. You need to think, what are my customers seeing? What are they expecting? And what will encourage them to click on the products and add them to the cart? And I think a lot of WooCommerce stores get that wrong. Another good example is that a lot of stores only have one product. Like, let's say you've created, this is a client website I did years ago, a really special electronic car cover, and that is your one product. And they were using WooCommerce, but they were like, hang on, the store is designed for multiple products. What's the point in a shop page and things like that? Even the layout of the product page is not designed for if that's your only product. Really, you want something much more bespoke, don't you?
Yeah, I think some of the beauty in WooCommerce is customizability and extendability. So you're able to do things on WooCommerce that perhaps you aren't able to do on Shopify. You know, you've got complete control over how you can do that. And obviously there's a barrage of plugins that allows you to modify that experience as well, whether that's offering different pricing options, whether you're offering new product images, whether you're able to add discounts on the page and things like that. I think that's why WooCommerce is great for me, because it gives you that flexibility.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the challenge is encouraging people who are building a WooCommerce store to do that piece of work. You don't just install the thing. That's a starting point. And it's an amazing starting point. It has so much built into the free plugin. But to make it successful, you do need to tailor it to that type of shop.
I think that's, whilst there is a lot out of the box, actually, when we start thinking about that customer journey, there's lots more that you can add into it, or lots more that you want to add into it to drive people around your store, help them find other products. And every store is pretty bespoke and unique in terms of, you know, how you want to manage that journey. So I think there's a lot to do on any kind of e-commerce store to really optimize that experience. WooCommerce is obviously a great start out of the box, but there's always a lot to add.
Yeah, you mentioned finding products. That's another challenge for store owners, because WooCommerce has a product search widget, which is a very basic keyword search. And it also has some filter widgets, which are basically just price, rating and attributes. But they're not particularly engaging. Like, they reload the page every time you perform a filter, which isn't ideal, instead of using Ajax. And the product search widget is not particularly modern, it's just a keyword search. So for example, Yith have a good plugin, I forget what it's called now, something about WooCommerce search, which is more of a predictive search. So it adds a search bar across your list of products where it comes up with suggestions that you can click on, and a much more modern searching experience. And we have a plugin called WooCommerce Product Filters, which adds more kind of dynamic filters, which use Ajax and are more visual, so that you can, for example, you can add category filters and actually display an image for each category. So if you're selling clothes, you can have an image of a top, an image of a bag for the accessories or whatever, and people can visually choose what they want instead of having to read a long list and things like that. Or they can click on color swatches to filter by that color that they're looking for. So all those sorts of things, depending on what you're selling, is worth considering to help people find products quickly to get them onto the product pages.
Yeah, and search is such an important part of that experience, and trying to discover products and surface them to people, especially if you've got a big store. We've used Algolia's AI search plugin on multiple sites, actually, not just on WooCommerce sites. Because what it does is it offers a great search experience. So it's fast, it's route performant, it's Ajax based. And actually, if you use Algolia AI search, it's got a recommend part to that, where it can recommend other products within the same category or that meet those same search terms. So like, keyword search is, you know, your absolute basic, but you know, you need to be in a position where when you're allowing people to search products, you've got fuzzy matches, you've got the ability to bring in things that it thinks other people are searching for when they're searching for those terms, and quickly find them and bring them to the user.
How do you get that on your store? Is it a plugin?
It's a plugin, yeah. And I suspect you can do additional things with it, as you can with all of these things.
So far we've talked about the product listing pages and finding products. And you have a product called Personalized WP. Would you recommend personalizing those pages in any way?
I think it depends on what your aim is. So I think everybody wants personalization in their store, because they want to give the user exactly what they need. But you can use it in multiple ways. So one thing you might do is, maybe if a customer's been on a page or looking at a products for a specific length of time, you might pop up or add a banner to that page, or add a coupon so that they're encouraged to buy that product and put it in their basket. Maybe they've been looking at it for a long period of time and they're running an hour. You could maybe pop up a coupon and say, well, add it now, we'll give you 10% off. Or you might want to use personalization to segment users as they go around the site to understand the kinds of products that they're looking at. And once you put them into segments, so, you know, if they're going around a store and they're looking at, you know, women's boots, and you know that they're looking at women's leather boots, being able to put them into a segment to understand that that's the kind of products that they're interested in, you can then show other recommended content related to those items. So you're obviously not going to show them recommended content for men's shoes, because they're most likely to be a woman and they're most likely not to be interested in men's shoes.
Where would that recommended content appear?
So particularly with our plugin, actually you can set up blocks in the block editor, and you can choose where that block appears in your page. That might be underneath the main products itself. So you've got some recommended items and you can choose to show it or hide it based on different conditions or when they hit those conditions. So sometimes it might not show for some people, it might show for other people.
That sounds good. So you might conditionally display a block above the list of products on the shop page with a special offer for that user. And you'd word it in a way that makes it sound like they're really special or something like that. Or maybe add urgency or something.
Yeah, we all want to feel special, don't we? This is just for me. But I think that's the holy grail, isn't it? Particularly in commerce, is trying to have that one-to-one personalized shopping experience. And obviously it's quite a challenge to get there sometimes, but you can get some of the way. So you can understand maybe where they've come from. So you can understand their intent and where they've come to your shop. So have they come from a social network, for instance? Have they come from Facebook? Have they clicked on an ad? Is there a referrer that we know about that we can understand why they're coming to our store? Are they coming from a particular country? Are they coming from the US? Are they coming from the UK? Are they coming from France? Would that impact on how we might deliver products to them? Would that impact on the kinds of products that they might be interested in? Are they a new visitor? Have we seen them before? Are they a returning visitor? If they're a returning visitor, maybe you want to show them a discount code to do that. Are they coming at a particular time of year? You know, is there a seasonal sale that we can show to them? Do we know if they're a returning visitor, where they bought a product before, if they have bought a product before? How can we show them similar products? Obviously not take them down the rabbit hole of only showing them, which happens on Amazon quite a lot. Don't you? You go on Amazon and you buy a kettle and then, you know, for the next 3 months, they're showing you pictures of kettles and you're like, well, I've bought a kettle. Actually, we want a better experience than that. We want it to be a bit more rounded.
Well, that's largely about the setup, isn't it? When you set up personalized WP, you need to think, if they have already bought something, does it mean that's a category they're going to buy from regularly? Or is it a one-off purchase and you don't show them another sofa for another 2 years or something, but instead you show them cushions or something that if you've just bought a sofa, you might want? So really, I'd say that's a setup issue and Amazon have got that wrong in that instance.
We're saying Amazon's got it wrong there. I mean, they've been doing it for a few years. You think they would have fixed that by now, wouldn't it?
So does it know when there's a logged in user, or even through cookies or something, does it know information from previous purchases like their name? So can it say, hello, Paul, welcome back. We've got a great offer for you today.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have visitor profiles in the pro version of the plugin that allow you to track that user around the store. So you're seeing that their buyer journey and you can see which pages they've been to. And if they purchase a product or maybe if they fill in a form on the website, then we can take that data and attach it to their visitor profile. And then as they're going around the website and they look at particular products or they go to specific pages, you can choose to put them into different segments. So segments are basically just groupings of people that are, you know, have performed a particular action or have done something on the site and you want to group them all together. So for instance, you might set up a segment for people that come from the UK, and anybody that comes from the UK, we know that they're in the UK, they'll go into that segment and then you can show them some content based on the fact that they're in the UK. Or if they've bought a particular product, if they have bought some nails, for instance, go back to your earlier example, and we know that they bought nails, that might lead you to show them different content. You might show them wood in a block in the future because they bought nails. So, you know, you want them to tap the nails into something. So we're going to put them into a segment that says they bought nails and therefore we're going to show them other products because we know that they bought this product over here.
That sounds good. And I think that most WooCommerce stores are not doing that kind of personalization at the moment. So that would be a good way to stand out a bit and stay ahead. A bit like booking.com and all its clever algorithms that it's always showing something dynamic on the page to get you to book straight away and things like that. I'd say there's a fine line between making people feel special and welcome and creeping them out through knowing too much. Do you have any advice on getting that balance right?
Yeah. So there is that. And, you know, you're always like, oh, my God, I mentioned kettles on a podcast once. And then Alexa must have been listening, because now when I go browse around the web, I'm just seeing adverts for kettles. And, you know, and that stuff does happen in the background. So, you know, larger enterprise clients use customer data platforms to aggregate data from multiple platforms and pull it all into a single profile. So where you're, you know, you're thinking about something on one platform, it can get pulled into somewhere else. They match up the data and then it comes out on another website. So some of that stuff is real, but it does freak people out. We've got, we're doing a release of the product next week, and there's a privacy feature in there actually. So we can anonymize those profiles. So if you don't want to capture data, then you can still track people around the website. You can still put them in segments, but we don't take any of the personal details or store them on in the plugin so that you can't use them in the future, which I think is quite important. I think also it's worth talking about AI in relation to these things as well, because, you know, hot topic at the moment, the bubble hasn't quite burst yet. So everybody's talking about AI. And obviously when we talk about optimizing pages on your store and optimizing its product pages, there's a lot of plugins or features out there which help you to optimize the content of your pages. So that might be optimizing the meta titles, the description, the titles, any metadata that you've got in that page as well, and help you write that description for different audiences.
Any plugins you recommend for that?
I think, no, not in particular. I think they all do a much of a muchness. They're all, you know, a lot of them seem to be connecting to places like OpenAI and allow you to use your accounts to then generate that text. But I was going to say, there aren't, what we haven't quite seen yet is too many plugins that use AI for product recommendations. So obviously, if you're a bigger platform like Amazon, you can quite happily have the budget to do that. But AI product recommendations is actually, it can be a little bit costly, because you might have a large catalog and you need to take that data and you need to go and put it into an AI platform, and then you need to train that model. But it's something that we're going to add to Personalized WP in the near future. So we think we've got a simple way of doing it that allows to have AI recommendations, which should be a little bit more focused on understanding the journey that somebody's been through, and then, you know, giving them a better response rather than just here's some other stuff in the category. We'll be able to be a bit more clever about what we're doing.
That sounds good, yeah, because WooCommerce itself does have the ability to show, oh, I always get them confused, cross-sells on the product page, I think, and upsells on the cart page. I think it's that way round. But they're kind of quite manual, like you just have to select. If I've got a red T-shirt, then I can select the red hoodie or something, or a red cap as a cross-sell on the product page or something. And they also appear kind of really low down on the page, so they're quite easy to miss. So I'm not a huge fan of that functionality. I think there's more clever ways to do it. Even without AI, like you can display order bumps on the checkout, which kind of is quite a nice way of doing it. Like Iconic have a plugin called Sales Booster for WooCommerce, which does that kind of thing, or pop-ups that you've just bought one thing and it recommends something related. But I like the idea of using AI to do it more dynamically, because that would still require choosing what appears in each circumstance rather than doing it based on user behavior.
Yeah, because I think a lot of personalization, some people use the term display conditions, are quite manual, and it means you have to go through a lot of setup, and you need to have to go through a lot of thinking about what you're doing. And for smaller store owners, you know, actually that's quite a lot of work to be thinking about all these things and trying to make sure that you're covering all bases. Obviously, for the bigger players, they've got teams of people that can do that. So anything that we can provide that gives a little bit more than just your standard, here's other things in the category, we'll obviously increase revenue because it's a little bit more focused and targeted.
Yeah, I think that's definitely worth doing. Especially, imagine a small store business-wise with lots of products. That's a big overhead to be doing the required time to decide what to upsell for every product, and which you need to do for maximum impact, but that requires a lot of data analysis and manual work. So if AI can do it for you, then that would really help you get ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's move on to the individual product page, because we've talked about finding products, how you display them in a list, and so then you click through to the product page. And again, with WooCommerce, typically it always looks the same. So on the top left, you've got an image and you might have thumbnails underneath where you can view multiple images. And then you've got the title, price, star rating, short description, and add to cart stuff on the right. And then you might have more long description and reviews and things at the bottom. So that's your typical layout, which again might not work for all products. And WooCommerce has been a bit slow historically in introducing the block editor for product pages. And a lot of people have been doing it using, what's called? Jamie's plugin, Jamie Marsh under Pootle Press. They have a plugin that adds blocks to the product page. But it will be part of WooCommerce core before too long. And it's already in beta where they've got a block-based product page design, which will be much more flexible in terms of designing your own product pages with the layout that works for your products. Like, you might want bigger images or small images. You might want to display the add to cart button somewhere different, or all those sorts of things, and create a much more fancy layout. And there's quite a lot of plugins that you can use to enhance your product page as well. For example, the images, there are some plugins you can get, like there's one called WooThumbs by Iconic, where you can even add videos into the image gallery, which is quite cool. So if you're thinking sometimes on a fancy clothes store, the people, you can actually see the model walking around wearing that outfit, can't you? And so you want that in your image gallery, a more 360 view or something like that. So there's quite a lot you can do with the product page.
There is, but there's one big consideration that I think it everybody needs to have top of mind, and that's speed. So, you know, the majority of people buy on mobile now, and that's where your focus should be. So when you're designing that product page, when you're adding features to it or adding things that don't come out of the box, you need to be thinking about performance. You need to be thinking about your core web vitals. You need to be thinking about how that page is laid out on mobile and what people are going to see when they come there. Because obviously what we see on a desktop site or your laptop is probably very different to what you see on your mobile site. And if people don't, if that page doesn't load quickly, people are going to get bored and go away. And that's a general rule for across your store anyway, is making sure that it loads quickly.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's worth knowing who your majority of users are, because there's lots of stats now that the majority of people buying retail products primarily are using mobile, like a huge majority, actually. And yet most people are not designing their site mobile first. But I'd say you can't assume that, because like in my case, as a plugin store, the vast majority of our users are on a desktop computer because they are they're at work buying plugins, and they're probably web designers or building a website or something like that. So in our case, mobile's a bit important, but it's not at all the majority of users. So you have to look at your analytics and figure that out.
Yeah, understanding your audience is important, because you need to understand the audience from a brand perspective at the very least, because you want people to get in touch with you, feel like the store is made for them, and it's meeting their needs. So you really need to understand your audience, and that's going to drive a lot of the things that you do with your store. For instance, do you want a video of a model coming on and twirling around and showing what they're wearing? That might be good for some people. It might not be good for others.
Yeah, and you need things like good hosting to support your store so that it loads quickly, and make sure you use a good theme that's well coded and not too bloated. And we keep talking about plugins, but actually you should only install a plugin when there's a very good business reason to do so. And that, because everything you add to your store, however well coded it is, will weigh it down to some extent. Just by adding complexity. So you need to think, is this likely to increase my sales? And then ideally monitor, does it increase my sales, to decide whether to keep it.
And it's the overhead of managing the store when you've got loads of plugins, right? So, you know, every plugin gets updated typically and gets updated quite a lot these days. And every time you do an update, there's a chance that it might go wrong. It might have an impact. We see that even with core updates that changes the behavior to the way that people don't necessarily expect. If you're running an e-commerce business and it's your sole way of making money, then any time that you get downtime, you're potentially losing sales and losing revenue.
Yeah, that's super important. Like, one category of plugins that I'd say people tend to install without analyzing whether they actually needed that plugin is social sharing, where a lot of people put social sharing buttons everywhere they can on their product pages, for example, and don't actually monitor. Does anybody even use these buttons? And in my experience, generally they don't. And if people are going to share, they're going to share. It's not difficult to copy and paste a link or click the share option, which is already, if you're using mobile, there's a share button in your browser, isn't there? So that's an example of a plugin which probably isn't increasing your sales and does add some performance damage to your site.
Yeah, totally agree. Do you actually need it? Is this a plugin that's going to help you? Is it going to drive revenue? Or is it going to make your life easier? If not, probably don't add it. And got to have a really good reason to add a plugin.
Yeah.
Whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on, because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results, all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org. The Airwallex online payments plugin allows you to localize you or your client's WooCommerce store checkout experience, so any size business is able to grow without borders. Setup takes minutes, and you'll find improved checkout conversion rates by offering Apple Pay, Google Pay, and 60-plus local payment methods. And since customers are not redirected to a different checkout page, that info is saved, and you can offer recurring payments with WooCommerce subscriptions. What really stands out with Airwallex is merchants are not forced to convert foreign incoming payments to their home market currencies, and those funds can be used to pay suppliers internationally. So, literally, you save money all around. It's all there at airwallex.com.
So let's move on to pricing, since we're talking about the product page and how you price your products, because that's quite an important consideration from a marketing perspective. At Barn2, we do quite a lot of analysis. I think it's called elastic pricing, where you change your prices regularly and then you monitor the impact to try and get that sweet spot for each product. So I think it's really important to think very hard about what prices you charge. With personalized WP, how does that work with pricing? Is it like coupon codes that people can enter based on when the content appears for them?
Yeah, typically you might use it to provide discount codes or coupon codes that people have met certain criteria and you want to push them, you want to nudge them into making a purchase. We haven't looked at pricing changes. That's quite an interesting area, actually. I wonder if you could modify the price based on what you know about them, where they're coming from, if they're coming from a different social network. I think there's always one of those feelings that if you browse somewhere on a Mac, you're going to get a more expensive price than if you browse on a Windows machine. I don't know if you've heard that, But a lot of people say, "Go, oh my God, it's more expensive because I'm on Mac." I'm not sure if that's actually the case or not, or whether maybe some unscrupulous people do that. But I think it's important to definitely A/B test what prices work for your audience, because you could just be leaving money on the table. We all know that hotels have flexible pricing and dynamic pricing based on demand. It's not quite the same with an e-commerce store, but if you only have a limited number of items in stock and they seem to be selling well, that's a really good use case to actually increase the price if you wanted to try and make a higher margin on something.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't seen WooCommerce plugins that do that in the way that, as you say, hotel websites like Booking.com do. We have a plugin called WooCommerce Discount Manager, which lets you modify the price in lots of different ways with things like buy one, get one free offers and store-wide sales or specific categories only, or bulk pricing, like with a table showing if you buy this quantity, then you can save money. So that encourages people to buy more because they can visually see that if they increase the quantity, each unit costs less. But I've never seen a plugin that is that level of sophistication, which will change the prices based on things like sales volume or demand or something. So that would be interesting.
Yeah, it's a really interesting area, though, isn't it? As you think about it, that idea of scarcity, you know, obviously the hotel websites do it really well because they're like, well, we're running out. So, you know, we've only got so many rooms left. But maybe if you've got a limited amount of stock, maybe that's something that you could consider, particularly if something's going viral and you want to make more of it. I know that Disney charge more money when you go to their parks, depending on the day as well. So how busy is it in the parks these days? We're going to charge you more to use Disney Genie Plus, which is how you can get on rides and go through the lightning lanes. That allows them to really increase their margin on the busiest days in the parks.
Yeah, it's supply and demand, isn't it? But with things like that, there has to be a scarcity, because if everybody bought the fast pass because they get on the rides quicker, then nobody would get on the rides quicker. So I kind of hate that system. It's far too complicated. Best not get me started on that. But the principle of they're increasing the price in order to reduce the demand so that only a certain number of people buy it, because that has to be scarce, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think you also look at scarcity in terms of sales as well. So, you know, when's this sale going to end? Am I getting a discount for a period of time before the sale ends? And there's obviously some stores maybe are running constant sales. I remember back in the day when I was younger, there was a pine warehouse, a pine shop here that my grand and granddad used to live near to, and they were running a constant sale. You know, it was always a closing down sale, but you knew it wasn't ever going to close down. It was just like standard marketing. But I think it can help to bring in that I might miss out if I don't buy now. So I think sales are obviously a key part of any e-commerce site.
Yeah, there's a lot of ethical considerations around this whole area, aren't there? Of like, false scarcity is kind of dishonest if you're saying something is going to run out when it's not. And similarly, perpetual sales are also illegal in a lot of countries. So I think it's good to find the right balance of what will give a sense of scarcity that's real, and do sales in a way that don't devalue your product permanently, so people will still pay full price at a normal time. A lot of people are advising, for example, only do sales on specific occasions such as Black Friday, when everybody discounts, and that doesn't devalue your brand for the whole year. Whereas if you're doing a sale every few weeks, then people just wait for the sale, don't they?
Yeah. Do you see a massive increase in people? Do you think people wait for sales like Black Friday these days and then buy at that time?
I think so, yeah. It's hard to know. Like, for example, on Black Friday, I'm a terrible. I'm my own worst customer because most of the WordPress plugins that I buy, I wait till Black Friday. And so I manually buy all these same plugins every year and then cancel the renewal, which is exactly what I don't want my customers to do, of course. And so these are plugins I would have bought anyway. So actually, those companies are losing money, aren't they? And so I'm thinking, as a plugin company owner, I'm thinking, wow, we've got like 30% more sales in Black Friday month. But actually, a lot of them probably would have bought at higher prices if Black Friday wasn't a thing. So it's hard to know, but sales definitely go up.
Yeah, we were buying some garden furniture recently, and I was like, oh, let's just wait for the Easter holidays before we buy it, because there might be an Easter sale on. And it turns out that the item we wanted wasn't in the sale, which was frustrating. So I still bought it anyway, and I was always going to buy it. But there was in the UK, a chain called Pizza Express, and there, also elsewhere as well. I remember probably 10 to 15 years ago, they were discounted pretty heavily, and you could get, because there's a number of different Italian restaurant chains in the UK, so they went down this discount off the route. And it kind of got to the point that people started only going to Pizza Express when they got an offer. It was like, well, I'm not going to go because I know there'll be an offer, so I'm only going to go if I get an offer. And that then becomes the default. And, you know, they realized their mistake and they moved away from it. So you do have to be a little bit careful to make sure that your sales aren't too predictable, I would say. And maybe you don't do Black Friday every year, and maybe you do flash sales instead, which people maybe aren't expecting. But then that's a way to drive revenue in a slow period.
Yeah, because people do remember these things. So let's move on to the final part of the customer journey, which is the cart and the checkout. So in WooCommerce, someone adds product to the cart, they get taken to the cart page where they can make any changes, and then they go to the checkout and add all their information. So there are some quite good ways that you can optimize that process to basically speed it up, depending on what you think works for your customers. So we have a plugin called WooCommerce Fast Cart, which brings that process into basically a pop-up. So if you're on the product page and you add to the cart, then you can have the cart open up on the product page in a pop-up, or you can skip that and have the checkout immediately open in a pop-up, so people aren't going through like three pages to do that. And there's other ways to do it, like multi-step checkout. There's a plugin called Flux Checkout, which adds multi-step. So it's like enter your details and then your shipping and like a kind of tabbed layout. And they create a more kind of Shopify type checkout page as well, which is a bit more optimized for conversions. So I think about what experience would work for your types of products, and how basically the goal should be to speed up that part of the product, the purchasing process. Do you have any advice about the final bits of the process, Paul?
Yeah, I think it's all about speed and optimization. I think it's about checking out as quickly as possible. Because every time you introduce the option for somebody to think again, you know, even with something like an order bump, where you go, maybe you want to do this as well, you're actually introducing an element of doubt into people's mind about what they're doing, because they'll see that and then they'll go, maybe do I want that? And maybe they'll go away and then maybe they'll come back, and you've almost lost that moment. So having those optimized speedy checkouts are always a win for me. And I think particularly when you're talking about kind of new versus returning visitors, when I go back to a site and I buy for the second, third, fourth time, I just want to check out as quickly as possible. I want to make sure, you know, they've got my details. Hopefully they've saved my cart details, or I can use Apple Pay pretty quickly, and then I can get checked out as quickly as possible. I don't want to have to go through a lengthy checkout process and fill in loads of details. I want them to know what my delivery address is, because it's generally the same. I want them to use the same cart that they've used before. And I want to finish that process and get on with the rest of my life, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. And there's quite a lot of plugins you can use to improve that. One thing I like to do with WooCommerce is to use a checkout field editor plugin. There's lots available, including free ones on WordPress.org, which remove the phone number field, because I think that most e-commerce stores do not require the customer's phone number, and yet WooCommerce adds it by default. So I try to remove as many checkout fields as I can get away with. Because some you need, the payment gateway does require a certain number of fields, so you can't remove all of them, but I do try to get that down. And I'd recommend not using those plugins to add additional fields, which you can do, like, where did you hear about us? Word of mouth, Google, whatever. There are other ways to get that information that will not interrupt the purchasing flow. So I'd say avoid trying to use the checkout as an opportunity for that.
Yeah, I totally agree. The less fields you can put in there, the better.
PayPal checkout's quite good, isn't it? Because you don't have to enter your information at all. Have you used that?
PayPal, yeah, it's a bit of a love hate with PayPal, because we see it from the other end where we're developing products and commerce for some of our clients, and PayPal's just really expensive. Like, the fees that they charge are astronomical. And so we're not massive fans of PayPal, but obviously, you know, it's remembered. I buy a lot of vinyl records, particularly special mode vinyl records. My Sims, anytime they bring anything out, I have to do it. The link field that is on most of the checkout forms that I buy my records form is really helpful for me, because that, you know, it knows who I am, and it will quickly and easily populate my details for me.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So we've been through the whole customer journey on your store and talked about how to optimize your actual store with marketing in mind and to get the most sales and conversions. So let's move on to how you get people to your store in the first place. Do you have a favorite marketing strategy or stream?
Yes, I do. Well, I think I know the most successful, which is email marketing. Like, guaranteed, email marketing is probably the number one way of getting existing customers to return to your store and to drive more customers as well. So when we're talking about the checkout process there, one of the fields that you should never ever get rid of, even if you don't need it, is the email field. Most people need it because they want to send an order confirmation or follow-up. But having that email field, having that email address, is probably one of the most important things you can do to build a list, because email marketing allows you to do so much. You can do promotional emails, you can do welcome emails, you can do product emails, you can do sales emails, you can do coupons. It's really effective. Every customer is going to give you their email address, so you're pretty much opted in. As long as you don't spam people too much, as long as you kind of maintain your email hygiene, and you've got permission to send to them, you can make hay with your email list, because you can really segment people. It's not necessarily going to work for new customers, obviously, unless you're buying your list and trying to convince people to go to your store, but I wouldn't really recommend that. But certainly for existing customers, to enable them to come back and buy again, that's really where you should focus a lot of your effort, I believe.
Yeah, and there's plenty of plugins that integrate WooCommerce with your email platform, like Mail Opt-in, for example, and various others, MailChimp for WooCommerce. And ideally, you want to be sending customer sales data to that mailing list platform. Obviously, this needs to be in your privacy policy and all of the legislative stuff. But like, you want to know what customers bought, for example, in your email list, so that then you can segment based on previous purchasing behavior and things like that. So that can make it even more powerful and make them more likely to buy when you send them a Black Friday email, for example. You could have different Black Friday emails for different categories that were purchased from in the past, because you know what they're interested in.
Yeah, and you can also use emails to get a slight more viral effect as well, where you might use refer a friend emails. So you're sending out a coupon code for one person. You say, well, actually, if you can introduce another person to us, we'll give them a coupon code as well, or you'll get an enhanced coupon code. So you're going to get a bigger discount. So that really works as a strategy as well.
Yeah, true. Yith has some good plugins for that with point schemes and refer a friend schemes and things like that, where you can automate that and reward people for their customer loyalty. So obviously, you hope they will recommend you to their friends anyway, but an incentive is not going to hurt, is it?
No, not at all. Social proof, because your friends are telling you what you're doing, which is kind of like the second one that I'd, you know, is huge right now, which is social commerce. So being able to upload your store inventory up onto your social platforms, such as TikTok or Instagram or Facebook, and then being able to create posts and create adverts based on your inventory that take people straight back to their store. Like the audiences are there on those platforms, and they're far more engaged and likely to buy if they see something that's on one of those platforms as well. And that's actually a really good way of driving traffic to your store.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, I'm not an expert in this area, but there's some plugins that you can use to automate that. Like there's an Instagram plugin called, well, it's a WordPress plugin for Instagram called Spotlight, which will add actual buy buttons and things into an Instagram feed, which integrates with your WooCommerce store and things like that, and probably similar things for other social networks, and particularly ones that have the e-commerce in Google Shopping as well. You can integrate with all this stuff and have your WooCommerce products appear in the Google products results, and that's a really big opportunity. I know when I'm buying online, I always go to the shop section of Google in the results. So anybody that's displaying their products there is onto a winner.
Yeah, and I think WooCommerce offer a bunch of plugins that are WooBranded plugins, not all of them, but that allow you to sync your inventory up to those platforms and do that, as well as syncing your inventory to Google Merchant Center so that you can appear in a Google Shopping list. And then you've also got the opportunity to retarget people as well with adverts as they're browsing around the web. If they come to your platform and they've seen something, then actually you can set those retargeting ads up to follow them around. But you've got to understand your audience, going back to what we were saying earlier, as to know which channel is going to be the best for you, particularly on social. So, if your audience is Gen Z, and, 18-year-olds, they probably aren't going to be on Facebook, are they? Because they all left when their grands joined Facebook, but they will be on TikTok and they will be on Instagram. And actually, I think Pinterest is quite an interesting platform as well, because Pinterest is like 80% women purchasing using Pinterest, and they're generally higher earners, and they're generally mums as well. So actually, there's a really nice persona for some of these platforms where you can go, actually, well, I don't need to do all of them. I can just work out what my products are good for and send it over to there. And it might be that Facebook's absolutely right for you because it's the biggest audience and it's got your target market. But I think you need to have a think about what your audience is, who's going to buy from you, and make sure that you're targeting the platforms where they're already on.
Yeah. And with the right platform, I think social retargeting ads can be very powerful because it almost jumps you straight back into the shopping experience that you either completed or abandoned previously. So I'm old, so I use Facebook and often, like, say I've been browsing jewellery or something and not bought, that same jewellery shop will appear in my Facebook feed with a gallery that I can swipe to view the different items, some of which are the ones I viewed and some of which I don't know how they've chosen, but they've cleverly chosen related things. So suddenly you're not scrolling Facebook, you're shopping on a shop you were interested before. And it's very clever psychologically that it just changes your mode somehow into now I'm shopping.
Yeah, and I think that the only platform that I'd actually not advertise on right now is X or Twitter, because I think that the quality of ads and the types of products that are being advertised on that social platform right now are not as good. So I look at a lot of the products that are advertised and I'm like, I either don't like the advert or like the kind of products not quite right for me. So I guess you do need to be a bit careful about where you're going. to reinforce that.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever engaged with an ad on Twitter. They just aren't interesting. They've got it wrong somehow, haven't they?
They have. And you think that obviously, I think they used to be better. And platform maybe is degraded. I know you spend a lot of time on Twitter. You probably see more adverts than I do. Unless you pay for premium, so you don't have to look at them. But do you use... So it, like in the WordPress community, particularly when we're building stuff, actually, there's a lot of opportunities for sponsorship in things like newsletters or what we're doing. And influencer marketing is quite a big thing as well. Have you ever used, or would you say that you've used social media influencers or sponsorship in that way to drive interest in one of your products?
Not particularly successfully. Our products are very, very specific, and our marketing has always worked best when we just make sure we're there for people that are searching for our solutions. So if somebody Googles WooCommerce product filter plugin, we want to be there. But if we do a more general influencer type advert, like someone does a YouTube video about us generally, it's not that likely that someone that's looking for WooCommerce product filters in that moment is going to watch it and buy. And we've got 19 premium plugins as well. So it's like, well, what do they focus on? So it would just be a kind of general brand awareness play about Barn 2. And that's not what gets most of our sales. We get most of our sales, like I say, from people searching for solutions. And if they're aware of us as a company, we might have more credibility, so they're more likely to convert. But ultimately, we just need to show that we meet their problem. But so I think we're a bit unusual in that respect, because if you're selling something that people could buy at any time, like a clothing store, where if they like the clothes, they're going to buy it. They're not like, right, this week I'm going to buy a T-shirt and any other week I'm not going to buy a T-shirt. That's not how it works. So I think it can work for other things, but not necessarily for us.
Yeah. So I did, like, you know, we come across clients using social media influencers. I'm always surprised at the cost of doing so, you know, what they can charge based on their audience, and actually how effective it is. You know, it's a lot of money and it's a bit of a gamble, but if you can get the right person, it's obviously not going to take your brand, and your brand image is quite important when you associate with somebody else outside of that. Then I think that you can, you've got a chance of really going viral with one particular product. I think it is based on one particular product at a time. But yeah, I know that works for some companies.
What's your view on Google ads, particularly for newer WooCommerce stores that maybe haven't built up an organic profile yet?
I think paid marketing is important for everyone, but I think it's what your adverts say. So I think there's a lot of competition out there, and it's really hard to get seen. And there's also, you know, a lot of people say ads don't work. You need to spend a lot of money to do it. I think you've got to target your advert to the right audience. So for instance, if you're selling, I mean, towels, for instance, your advert probably shouldn't say, we've got a large selection of bath towels or something like that. You should be trying to concentrate on the more niche elements and USP of your towels. So you might say that they're like hand woven eco-friendly towels. And actually that's going to find its own audience of people that are looking for that kind of thing in particular. So I think with Google Ads, I think it's part of the strategy. It's very short term. It's very costly, and it can get very costly. But as long as your margin's right, as long as you know that if you spend £1,000, you're going to make £2,000 in revenue, and actually you're going to make a profit of £200. If you can get to that stage, you know, actually then it's just feeding the ads, because you can just carry on with that strategy all you like. But getting to that point is a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, and I know some people that have done it very successfully and others that have put lots of money in and never had anything back. So needs a bit of investment to get started.
Yeah, and I think it is all about that targeting. It's just like what you do with your SEO, organic SEO. making sure you're targeting for the right solutions for the right audience. It's a cheaper, quicker way of doing it. I do wonder how accurate the search ads statistics are and how many people are actually clicking on them versus bots. I think that's always a worry, that you can see clicks and nothing happens, and you can't always tie up the data. And obviously Google has so much off the market that you are kind of beholden to them and you don't really get a say. And I know for people that advertise a lot on Google, you know, they've seen their cost rise over the past decade, you know, where they might have spent £1 million on ads previously, they're now spending £10 million on ads to get exactly the same effect. But with that kind of paid advertising, it's always about understanding your margin for doing that ad. As I say, if you know you're going to spend X amount of money, but then that's going to mean that you get X back. And as long as you've got your margin in there, you almost don't want to turn that tap off as long as you've got products to sell, because you know you're making money every time you spend a pound, you're going to get £3 back, for instance.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
Also, I was just going to talk about that kind of more organic long tail SEO, because you do that really effectively with the stuff that you're doing. But are you mainly blogging and then directing people to the store once they've come and read an article, or are you using those SEO tactics in your product description and titles and things like that as well?
Our product pages tend to rank relatively well anyway, without needing that much extra optimization, because mainly our product names are very descriptive. Yes. They are exactly what the product does. They're not marketing names. They just are what it does. WooCommerce product filters, WooCommerce product table. So that makes it a lot easier to rank. And a good thing about Google is that it recognizes that product pages and long form content are different things. So we will often have a long blog tutorial ranking together with the product page for the same keyword. They don't tend to compete with each other. So we try to do both. But most of our SEO efforts go into long blog articles, which tend to be tutorials because of the type of products that we sell. And then, as you say, they direct to the product page then.
Yeah, sure. And do you see much from product videos from YouTube, for instance? Do you see traffic coming from there?
Yes, a lot. We hired a full-time YouTuber just to build our YouTube channel a year and a half ago now, actually. And that has really grown. But we did that because even just from me doing videos with no kind of strategy, we were tracking regular sales from YouTube. So we identified that was a good income stream for us. So now we're investing in it properly. And while it doesn't bring in as much as our organic SEO, it's a good backup. And I think it's important to have multiple marketing channels which are generating sales in case something ever goes wrong with a Google algorithm change or something like that, that at least we know we've still got YouTube.
Yeah, I think with physical products, it's quite important as well. But, you know, the unwrapping, the unboxing of products, you know, creates that viral thing, doesn't it? And you're straying kind of into social media adverts of territory there again, where you might hire somebody to do a video and review your product. But that can be quite effective for certain types of products. What about affiliates? Do you use affiliates much?
Yeah, we have an affiliate program with the best affiliates for us are people that are quite high profile in the industry, like WordPress blogs, for example, that lots of people go to their site. So WordPress blogs about WordPress, I should say. And the best affiliates are people that are motivated to produce regular content about our plugins. And we would advise them with keyword ideas and things like that, and information about what works for other people. Whereas if we have to do everything, they're not really engaged, and it's not really any better than having content on our own site. So we try to support them in really promoting the products their end.
Yeah, there's a lot of affiliate networks, aren't there, like Commission Junction, and if it's still called Commission Junction right now, or impact.com, where people will create, you know, niche sites or in particular areas and just be aiming at getting affiliate links, which is actually quite a helpful, useful source of traffic if you want to follow that route. Again, as long as the people that are talking about your products are the right kind of people, and you're not introducing sort of any kind of toxicity into your own marketing. That's quite important.
Yeah. They need to add value, don't they?
Yeah.
Because if they're just outranking you and you've got to pay them commission, you lose. But if they're producing unique content, videos, whatever, to get a wider audience to your product, then it's worth paying their commission.
Yeah, and I think they can target niche audiences perhaps in a way that it's very difficult for you to do just as a store owner, because you're probably casting a slightly wider net. So quite useful, I think, just to target, you know, those really niche audiences and get somebody else to work on that for you, and then take a small commission if they do actually drive any sales.
Yeah. Okay, so that's been amazing. We've covered a lot of both the on-page and off-page elements of building a successful WooCommerce store. So this is basically just a small amount of what's in the ebook. So you can get the free ebook, Marketer's Guide to WooCommerce, from the filter.agency website. Paul, where on the website is it? Because the link's quite long.
Ah, that's a really good call. So in our navigation, we have a resources in the top navigation. We have a resources drop down, and within there, we have a link to our enterprise guides. And we have those enterprise marketers guides to a bunch of different types of things that are related to web. So WooCommerce is one of them. We've also done ones on personalization, sustainability, security, your WordPress platform. So it's worth checking them all out. They're all free. Obviously, we ask you to register, and we get an email address, and we might talk to you in the future, but you don't need to receive our emails if you don't want to. That content is there for free for you to look at.
Excellent. So thank you so much for coming on Do The Woo. Apart from on filter.agency, where can people find you online?
Oh, well, I can be found on LinkedIn, and I can be found on Twitter, because I still call it Twitter, not X. I'm there, I post. I will also be around at WordCamp EU in June in Torino. So if you see me there, please do come up and say hello, because I get a little bit anxious. So I like people to come to me, it's easier. So please do come and say hello. And if you want to check out our plugin Personalized WP, you can go to personalizedwp.com. That's personalized with a Z. There's a free plugin in the .org repo in the search for Personalized WP, and then the pro version is on our website, where we have some tips and tricks on how you can segment users, how you can score people for a lead, and how you can build business profiles and then show and hide content.
Oh. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, Bob WP again. I want to thank both Katie and Paul for sharing so much on today's episode. Marketing a Woo shop is often one of the biggest challenges, and I hope they helped you to get on track. Also, do pick up the free ebook on filter.agency. And thanks to OmniSend and AirWallox for stepping up and sponsoring this show. Check them out at omnisend.com and airwallox.com. Until the next time.